Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Summer Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and State Golf Representative Sophie Hilditch.
Good on you, Wallace. Hello, everyone. It is another episode of Hooked on Sport. It might be the biggest episode of Hooked on Sport of the year because we're heading towards Simpson and Sanderson Cup Grand Final Day. In the Simpson Cup, it'll be Cooyonga and the Grange to go head-to-head. And, of course, in the Sanderson Cup, it is the Grange and Royal Adelaide who will face off. And when we talk about the Royal Adelaide Golf Club and their Sanderson Cup team, we talk about the experience and insight of Sophie Hilditch. And Sophie joins us now. Sophie, congratulations on making the grand final.
Thanks, Hookie. Yeah, very excited. Finally here. I was hoping that we'd be able to have this conversation, though it was looking like we might not be having this conversation on Sunday at a couple of points, but here we are and I'm very excited.
Congratulations. It was a superb performance. We'll get to it all a little bit later on, but just tell us in the aftermath. I imagine the girls were really excited. Your Pike Cup team has gone through as well. Both of you taking on the Grange next week. Just your initial thoughts on what the club has achieved this year, despite a pretty serious loss of players.
Yeah, it's been a huge achievement. You're dead right. We had an incredible cohort of juniors. A lot of them have gone off to play college golf or turned professional. So we have gone through a bit of a period of losing a few of our key Sanderson players, but it's been incredible the work that the squad has done in bringing new players along, but also bringing some of our experience that we used to rely on back in the day, bringing them back into the side. And we've really shown that Royal's got some serious depth, and we've learnt from the girls who've turned professional and gone off to college golf, and we still have their support. We've even got Alice Cho over in Korea, and she's actually wearing Royal Adelaide gear, posting on Instagram and letting us know she's still in full support. And it was great to see after the Pike and the Sanderson one, we'd had a message straight away from Alice telling us congratulations, and she wished that she was there celebrating with us, but we'll be watching closely next weekend.
Yeah, fantastic. I did see that from Alice. That's really special, isn't it? That the result, that it would be very easy for her just to sort of leave all that behind her and not be too focused on it, but for her to really show that interest and stick on her Royal Adelaide polo and send a photo back. Fantastic stuff. Talk about fantastic stuff. I love this part of the week. It's when we discuss Sophie Starr.
Yeah, well, I've got a bit rogue and I've got a feeling, well, Wallace is currently over in Tasmania gallivanting around, so he can't give me a yellow card.
Cats away, mice are at play.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've gone two. I'm so sorry, but I couldn't differentiate between the two of them.
Geez, I'm going to have to go back through the archives here because I'm sure any time I've tried two, there has been a significant warning dished out by your good self.
Yeah, 100%. But Wallace isn't here, so there's no one to issue the warning to. So I've gone hockey players, Cade McCourt and Monique Shepherd, who've both been recognised as joint winners of the Junior Sports Assistant Fund Commercial Club Exceptional Junior Program. These two young, inspiring players are absolutely incredible. You know I come from a hockey background, so as soon as I saw it, I was super excited. They're both members of the Lower Southeast Hockey Association, and they're consistent representatives in junior state teams. But the thing that I was most excited to read about these two players is what they do for their home clubs and associations. They're both under 16, and they're already volunteering for both clubs and coaching, like under eights. And I just think that's incredible because it's showing that their passion for hockey goes beyond just playing, but also wanting to help those that are coming underneath them, which is surprising considering they're only under 16. So for Cade and Monique, they were clearly a Sophie Starr and they're joint winners. So how could you differentiate between the two?
So I'm not going to argue and I am not standing on any ground that I have any right to argue either. You do whatever you want, mate. It is Sophie Starr. It has nothing to do with me. Congratulations to the both. The one thing I note about hockey is pretty much all of our hockey roos over the last 15 years have come from regional zones. So you talk about both of these kids coming from the lower southeast. That's the same place where Hattie Shand, a current hockey roo, is from. Two of the previous three before that, Carrie McMahon and Georgie Parker, both out of the Riverland. And then, of course, Jane Claxton, who is a bit of an Adelaide legend, if you like, from the Burnside Club, where you're from, of course. So it's just amazing when you consider the lack of facilities that you see in the country zones and how many kids come through to the absolute pinnacle of hockey from the country area. So well done to Kate McCourt and Monique Shepherd, Sophie's stars for the week. Can I just quickly share with you Ben's best? It's the story of the North Eagles Lacrosse Club. You and I have followed lacrosse a bit in the last 6 months. North Eagles is a a slightly unusual amalgam of the Eagles Lacrosse Club and the North Adelaide Lacrosse Club. They have amalgamated, but only at state league level for the women. The men actually amalgamated as well, but they came back apart 2 years ago, year after winning the state league premiership. So it's an unusual sort of marriage between these two clubs. The North Eagles women at state league level had been in the competition 4 years and had not won a game. Four straight years. 0-0-0, Soph. Well, on Friday night before Anzac Day, they played against Sturt. Now, Sturt are back into the state league for the first time, and we're always going to be a side that is going to take some time to develop and so forth. But Eagles, in their fifth year, have finally won a game at league level, which is just an absolute thrill. They're coached by Peter Mathwin. He's the caretaker coach. He's out of the Brighton Lacrosse Club. His daughter Hannah actually coached the team for the previous 2 years. So anyway, very, very exciting for the North Eagles Lacrosse Club. 4 years without a win. Finally, they've got one. They are Ben's best for the week.
Awesome choice for a Ben's best. I love lacrosse. I'm a huge lacrosse fan, having been to my first lacrosse game at the end of last year. Or was that the end of last year or beginning of this year?
It was. Feels like it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. We've put on that many shows since. But yes, it was in around about November last year. You went off to the Sixes. This is the tennis side stuff, which is the traditional format of the game. Yeah, but pretty incredible. Talking about pretty incredible, Soph, is the form of Nellie Corder. She has taken out the first women's major of the year, the Chevron Championship at TPC Harding Park. Tell us how she did it.
Well, it wasn't Harding Park, but it was Memorial Park. We'll keep it pretty, pretty close.
Got my parks mixed up. Yes, Memorial Park. Yeah, apologies. That's where they dug the little swimming pool, which we'll get to.
I thought you might be asking me a few questions about that. No, but it was incredible to see Nellie Corder win. She won wire to wire, which she openly admitted is actually quite difficult to do. She came into the final round of a 5-shot lead, and she said, Nellie's quite an aggressive player. I really liken her to a Rory McIlroy or a Scottie Scheffler who really goes for pins and often known for not being the best putter, and I've spoken about it here on this podcast. She often misses short putts. In fact, all her bogeys today were from 3 putts. So she was saying holding a lead of that, you know, magnitude, it's really hard to decide when to be Nellie, which is when to be aggressive, and when to go back and be a bit defensive. And it almost looked like she was a bit tentative at the start and then all of a sudden started firing for some pins around that middle section between like 7 and 13 and really got back to her usual self, got back that 5-shot lead and then came back again. And it was really interesting. She, on 16, it's this short par 5 and they pushed up the tees, and Nellie's a big hitter and known for just her driving accuracy and how long she is with the girls. And she doesn't actually ever go full force either, because she openly admits she doesn't have to. She chose to lay up even though she had a mid-iron into that green. And it was clear from there that she was going to be a bit defensive coming in. Even with the short par 3, 15, which is surrounded by a little watery creek, she just went middle of the green. And it was really textbook, Ben. She was incredible from hole 1 to hole 72. She'd opted to not play a massive event in the week leading up to it and said, even though that's one of the biggest purses in the LPGA, that she wanted to focus on getting that third major win. And it really showed, because she knew that course absolutely like a rock star. And she made a point of making a lot of birdies, but really did not make any massive mistakes. So it was really impressive to see, and really excited to see Nellie Corder get that win.
She's the 35th golfer to win a major championship wire to wire, only the third all-time to win it wire to wire after leading by multiple strokes after each round, first since Amy Alcott in 1991. So what you're talking about here, Soph, is absolute world history in women's professional golf. It's something quite incredible.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And she's reclaimed her world number one position, which is where I think Nellie Corder should be. Her season has been incredible. She hasn't got the win, but I mean, we've been talking about her the whole season, coming runners up and being around that mix completely. So I'm not surprised for her to be our first major winner of the season.
The pool. We need to get to it, Soph. So the Chevron is the continuation of what was the ANA Inspiration. It was played at Dinah Shore. There was a pond alongside of the 18th green known as Poppy's Pond. And the tradition was the winner and their caddy would jump into the pond to celebrate the win on the second hole. The event has been moved basically due to the sponsor to go to Houston, which is where Chevron is based. I don't know that that's worked for a number of reasons. We won't worry about all of that, but what they have done is dug a little temporary pool alongside the 18th green. It's had some remarkable quirks to it. It's the first time, I reckon, in the history of golf that there has been a deliberate water not hazard, if you like, because it's actually a free drop out, free relief out of it if you hit it in there. So that's something unusual in golf. But it was done for the tradition, the old tradition of the dinosaur and the ANA inspiration. Mixed reactions on it and some pretty aggressive opinions on both sides of the fence here. Soph, what's your take on the little temporary pool they built that Nelly did jump into, 4-foot pool that she jumped into to celebrate the victory?
Well, you actually mentioned her earlier on, and that's Amy Alcott, who has won the Chevron Championship 3 times, but it was 1988 that she first decided to jump into the Poppy's Pond. It's now been over 4 decades, just under. Am I doing my math right? Just under 4 decades.
That's right. Yeah. So in 2028, it'll be 4 decades.
Yeah, 4 decades then.
If nothing, math we can't not work. We can work out our maths here.
But look, it's been a tradition ever since that happened. People have always jumped in the pond, and then you get the big, massive bathrobe over the top when you're getting given the trophy and doing your final speech. I mean, our own Australian Grace Kim thought that the tradition should end once the tournament moved. But I'm siding on the other fence, and I thought Stacey Lewis has actually come out and said it best for me. It's a tradition. And for me, as a young girl, when I watched the Chevron Championship, I identified it with the people jumping into the pond and the towel. And that's what always stood out for me for the Chevron Championship. You know, it's so different, but it is like the Masters. I associate that with a green jacket. This I associate with jumping into a pond. The LPGA has not been good at keeping traditions. We've gone from 3 majors to 4, and now we've got 5. The LPGA Championship became the PGA Championship. And I just think it's really important for the LPGA to try and keep some of these traditions, which some of the young girls will one day be, you know, I want to jump into the pond or jump into the pool just like Nelly Korda did. And that's what I want to do. So for me, I was actually a massive advocate for it. And it was quite funny. Nelly Korda is a tall female and the pool was only 4 foot. So she definitely had to absolutely do a bomb into it because she said, I knew my feet were going to hit the ground pretty quick. But I just love it. I think it's a cool tradition. And I think the LPGA should be trying to keep more traditions like this.
Tell us how the Aussies went.
Well, the Aussies, probably not their best performance, but Hannah Green, once again, with a strong finish. She actually shot 6 under today to finish T7. Cassie Porter, really impressive from here, 34, but she was hanging around that top 20 for the first 36 holes.
Not a great last 18, I think, fair to say.
No, no, but I'm still super impressed. This is, what, her second year on the LPGA, maybe even her first year. So it's really impressive to be hanging around in those major championships with these big-name players. Minji Lee, T49. Karis Davidson, another one that I'm impressed with making the cut in a major that she hasn't played that many, T67. But for Grace Kin, Gabby Ruffles and Steph Kiriakou, it was a missed cut. Steph Kiriakou, I'm getting a little bit worried about her, Ben. Her swing is not looking good. I think she finished close to the bottom, maybe in the bottom 5. So someone we should be looking out for because she's often been a major contender in the past 2 years.
Class is permanent. Form can be temporary. I expect that we'll see Steph back before too much longer. But yes, her game is in a bit of a funk at the moment, and we certainly would like to see her back out of that sooner rather than later. One cautionary tale here, Soph, and that's that this is one of 5 majors for women's golf, the British Open, the US Open, the US PGA, and then you've got this one, the Chevron and the Evian. The crowds were pretty poor, and I think in part of that is because Memorial Park's hosted a men's tournament only a month ago, and that can be a little bit of an overload with professional golf, in particular at the exact same course. I do think it's a cautionary tale for the men who are certainly discussing the possibility of going towards 5 majors and elevating the players to major status, and I just think it can kind of water all of the majors down collectively when you decide to go to 5 and who knows, actually 6 and whatever majors. I mean, you know, they're majors for a reason and they do stand out, and you lose the capacity to stand them out if you make them a little bit too regular. So I just think what has happened with the Evian in particular is it has watered down this as a major event. And I think the crowds stand out. And I think the fact that they need to sort of take, you talk about tradition, I think it's a reasonable point, but they take a tradition from almost a different event at a different course and try and shoehorn it into this event just because they're trying to sort of latch on to something. But I think it is a cautionary tale for men that when you continually make signature events and elevated events and whatever you want to call them, suddenly they all just look a little bit the same. And I just feel like that's what's happened with women's professional golf and the five majors at the moment. So if the Zurich Championship finished this morning, an unusual event on the US Tour, it's the only event that isn't 72 holes of stroke play. They've lost their match play event. This is a pairs event where you play the first and third rounds as four-ball better ball and the second and fourth rounds as alternate shot or foursomes, as we would traditionally call it here in Australia. Won by the Fitzpatrick brothers, Alex and Matt. Matt's won, what, three tournaments in a month? It's a pretty incredible record. What did you make of this?
Loved it. I love this event. I love seeing team golf. I wish we could see more of it. It's part of the reason I love the Ryder Cup, because we don't get to see the formats like four-ball and foursomes. First brothers to ever win this event, which I thought was pretty cool. And it's huge for particularly the younger brother, Alex Fitzpatrick. He's also been in good form. He won the Indian Open only about a month ago. That was his first win on the DP World Tour. I think he's on the path to becoming a PGA player, but...
Well, he is now because he gets...
Well, he is now.
Yeah, gets an exemption. Oh, shut up.
You got to let me talk, Ben. At some point, you have to let me talk. You can't just keep jumping in. You did this last week. I had a couple of comments about it in my DM social saying, well done for telling Ben to shut up because you were on your path
there. Second week running.
Second week running. But that's exactly what I was about to say. Alex has now got a two-year full PGA status exemption, access to signature events for the rest of the year, and he gets to play in the PGA Championship, a major. It's absolutely massive to him. I think he had a flight booked for Turkey that night, and I got a feeling he walked off that green, and that was one of the first things he probably did was cancel that flight, because he's about to have a very full season and a very different looking season to what he thought he would have. But what I really loved about this, and I often get emotional watching golf, but just seeing the love of two brothers, and it's an amazing story, both brothers playing golf and reaching the heights that they have. I know Matt's third in the world and he showed it on the 18th green. He put a 50 meter bunker shot to a foot to get the win, but Alex dropped to his knees as soon as he tapped in that foot, and you could just tell Matt, having just won the RBC Heritage, started to struggle on the back nine. And I feel like the pressure of being there for his brother and knowing how much this would have meant for his younger brother and how this would have just leapfrogged his career, you could see that the pressure was getting to him. And actually, Alex had to really lift him up on that back nine and start hitting some good chip shots and start hitting some good shots, because Matt was getting a bit wayward and, you know, electing to hit iron off a couple of tees because his driver just wasn't working for him. And I don't know, the relationship between the two brothers really shone through in this tournament. And I think it really showed, particularly on that green, when they embraced and had that hug and the Fitzpatrick family were there. And it was incredible to see.
Alex is not a member of the PGA Tour just yet. He's about to be, of course. Matt is, and can invite him into the event over and above other PGA Tour members. Are you comfortable that that's a way into a two-year exemption onto the PGA Tour because your brother sort of got you in via the back door?
Yeah, I thought that might be a question from you. I saw it coming, because I don't think Alex probably would have got the exemption if not for Matt Fitzpatrick saying that, you know, I want to play with my younger brother. And he's been playing in the Zurich for the last 3 years, and the Fitzpatricks have always kind of been around the mark, but obviously this is the first one that they've got the win. And the field, to be honest, Ben, was not the strongest field anyway. It was pretty weak. So, yeah, I get what you're saying, but I can't move away from the storyline and thinking that it's just an exceptional storyline. And watching Alex come through that final stretch really showed that. And he's been winning on the DP World Tour now. So I think, honestly, Ben, I think he's probably on the PGA in 2027, regardless of this win. Maybe not with full access, but he would have been floating around.
Yeah, it was almost, well, not almost certain, but he was certainly was tracking for one of those top 10 spots. Yes. So I think from that perspective, it probably is a bit of a moot point anyway. But we kind of laughed when Chase Koepka was invited to, was given a live contract, really on the strength of the fact that they wanted his brother to come across. And I don't know that we can differentiate these too much. I suspect the Zurich either has to go to a completely different part of the year, or will get probably be one of the events that Brian Rolapp looks like he's going to cut in his desire to get scarcity on the PGA Tour. But the fact is, we've just had the Masters, then we had a signature event at Hilton Head, the RBC Heritage. We have this event in between, and then we've got two more signature events coming up before the PGA in the middle of May. So it's inevitable that blokes are going to take this week off. Yeah, I do like it. I like the fact that there are so many different ways to play golf, right? Match play, teams, all of these sorts of things. And the PGA Tour is focused almost exclusively on 72-hole stroke play events. So I do like the fact that there are some other ways to play it. So I do think there is a time and a place for this event, but it's probably not the end of April in between the Masters and the PGA with three other signature events. That's something that remains to be seen, I suppose. I might just touch on the Singapore Open very quickly. So if it was won by Jongwoo Ham, fascinating story. Absolutely shot the lights out at the Singapore Open. Unheard of outside of Korea until now. He was so impressive. The great story for Australia is that Cameron John, who had a wonderful year on the Australian PGA Tour, has finished second in this event. Only two strokes back. He was four strokes back after round three. So really impressive from Cameron John. This is a live qualified tournament. Who knows what that's going to mean in the long term. But certainly Cameron John has gone from battler on the PGA Tour to one of the guys that we could see having some real influence around world golf in the not too distant future. Not a great weekend for the Australians. Jack Buchanan missed the cut. Wade Ormsby finished in a tie for 37th. Not bad for him. Closed with a 68. Earns around $20,000 Australian, so kind of pays for the trip, doesn't it? Jack Thompson is the disappointment and the unfortunate story. He was 6 under and somewhere inside the top five after two rounds and then withdrew, and I was trying to work out what had happened. I got in contact with Adrian Wickstein overnight, who told me that he got a horrendous case of food poisoning on the Friday night that led into Saturday morning and had to withdraw when he's in top five. So he'll play in Korea this week. He's fine. So it's not an injury, which is probably the good thing. And we're not going to see him out for an extended period. He'll be back playing this week. But yeah, what a disappointment for Jack to have that go down just when he was right in the mix of potentially winning one of these tournaments. So bad luck for Jack Thompson. Wade Ormsby, not too bad. And yeah, a little bit disappointing the week for Jack Buchanan. But all of those boys will be back. What everyone wants to know about, Soph, it's the Sanderson Cup preliminary final review. Royal Adelaide has beaten Glenelg by 4-1. You were in it up to your elbows. You took on Jill Hodge. You had a tough win against Jill, who, as you'd come to expect from someone like Jill Hodge, she absolutely made you fight for it every step of the way. Reagan Denton had a pretty solid win over Zoe Manton. Sarah Crocker continued her unbeaten season for Glenelg with a win over Laura Birchmore. Eliza Bartlett came back into the team and got it done in an absolute cracker against Maya Yakupec. And of course, Angela Plumridge, 3 starts in the Sanderson Cup, 3 wins. She got past Beck Hughes. 4-1. Tell us how you did it.
I can't tell you how I did it because I've got grand final coming up, so I can't relieve trade secrets. No, but it was exceptional to see. I think it was tighter than 4-1 always makes you feel like we smashed them, but it definitely wasn't a smashing like you mentioned. There was a lot of close games and a lot of close calls. Most of the time, Royal Adelaide were up in most matches, which is kind of exciting to see. I've often seen a couple of matches down and thought often that it might come down to my match, which is always a bit stressful. I always felt like I put my foot off the pedal because I all of a sudden thought, oh, my match might not mean anything here. So, and then Jill
actually
started to play some amazing golf, and actually our lead started to decrease. And as it always does, it came out to be a very even match. But no, Royal Adelaide, very excited to get the win over Glenelg. Glenelg have obviously had an incredible season, started a bit slow, but the likes of Maya and Sarah Crocker with their undefeated minor rounds is really what got them into the finals. And that form continued. Maya obviously went down to Eliza, but I saw some incredible golf coming from both girls. Worlds quite open, so you can always see what's going on, which is good as a captain because I can see how the girls are playing, and we're looking across fairways and having a look at each other and having a couple of jokes, which is always nice. But yeah, it was exceptional to see. Glenelg were, as always, tough competitors, and I expect to see a lot more from them next year. But no, glad that Royal got the win and we're off to grand final.
Glenelg made a shuffle to their order, which is interesting because it very rarely happens in women's golf. Now, I'll clarify this by saying that Jill Hodge started the year at 2 and Sarah Crocker started the year at 3. They had flipped during the year, but they flipped back for this a preliminary final. Did that throw you guys out? Because I imagine you're probably walking into the week pretty, very confident. I presume you were going to be playing Sarah Crocker.
Yeah, well, I figured that I might be playing Sarah Kirokou because that's what she's been playing in such good form. I think she could have easily played one or two. I think Zoe's been playing well as well, but if they'd shifted those two girls around, I wouldn't have been surprised. But to be honest, Ben, if I'd been Glenelg, I would have done something of my order as well, knowing that Royal Adelaide was coming into such good form. I don't think they would have known who our four and five was because we had qualified about six girls or five girls for that position. So I also think there would have been a lot of unknown for Glenelg. So I'm not surprised that they moved Sarah down to three and we're probably banking on her getting a win at three. I have to say, though, Laura Birchmore played incredible golf and the golf from both girls was insane. I think Sarah Crocker was about one under the card through 15. So it's also not like Laura played bad golf. Sarah just played exceptional golf and it was a close match all up. But yeah, I'm not surprised that they changed their order and the girls were actually prepared that there might be some changes. And I always say that I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think Grange will change their order next week, but I don't think you can expect to who you will be playing. It should be a case of I'm ready to play whoever they put against me.
Why don't teams move their orders a little bit more? I didn't speak to Fiona Eblin is their team manager. I spoke to her as part of the, you know, the preview interview. I didn't get into the tin tacks of where players were going to play, but it struck me that what she did with that team made sense from the perspective that they probably thought, do we have a matchup for Reagan Denton? No, we don't. Do we have a matchup for Sophie Hilditch? Possibly not. But can we win 3, 4, and 5? And that I understand. And that happens quite routinely in men's pennant golf, where a team like Mount Osmond will say, we don't necessarily have the strength at the top end. Let's see if we can win 4, 5, 6, 7. Why is there not that desire to shuffle things around like we see in men's golf in the Sanderson Cup competition?
Good question, because I always wonder why we don't shuffle. I think it's not frowned upon when teams shuffle. Like, for example, Royal thought nothing of it when Glenelg shuffled their order around. And I actually expected a bigger shuffle than what they did. So I don't think it would have been frowned upon if it had happened. But the one thing that I will say, I think the key difference between Simpson and Sanderson is Simpson has seven players and Sanderson has five. So I think potentially sacrificing a game and chucking someone in a position that you don't necessarily think they're going to win, losing a point out of a 5-point game is massive, whilst losing a point out of a 7-point game is completely different. So if you're hedging your bets on someone that you're putting there and saying, look, you'll just be a sacrificial lamb at number one, and that's actually really risky because then you've only got four games for 3 points. And when you put it like that, that's not a lot of games. So I think that's why you don't see the shifting as much as you'd expect. Like Simpson can often completely flip their order around. And you see it all the time, particularly with teams looking at getting relegated. You'll see Thaxted will often just switch it completely the other way around. And I think you can do it because if you have two sacrifices there, well, you only need, you know, one sacrifice, you only need 4 wins out of 6 games. Whilst if you do a sacrifice in Sanderson, 3 out of 4, that's not great odds. And that's expecting your four players to play unbelievable golf.
The maths actually makes sense, doesn't it? Because 4 out of 6 is 66%, 3 out of 4 is 75%. It's a lot easier to get to 66 than it is to 75. Makes sense. The other thing I love, and this goes just as much for Simpson Cup as Sanderson Cup, but I imagine Zoe Manton probably deep down knows she's a bit outgunned against Reagan Denton, but she just says, no, I've got number one on my back and I'm going to go out and take her on. And that's the one thing I love about our best young amateurs in South Australia is that they want to take on the best of the other teams. We've seen it with Alex Pacifico, who has really stood up for Royal Adelaide, but Sam Earle's never resiling from number one at the Vines. I love seeing Chris Austin at number one for Tea Tree Gully. We're routinely seeing Alex Hendrick at number one at the Grange and so on and so on. Old Durnford's been number one for Cooyonga. I just love the fact that there's a real badge of honour in wearing number one. Not that you wear number one, but playing number one for your club means a lot to everyone, whether it's male or female. And I just admire, you've done it a fair bit yourself, Soph, but if it's Amelia Winnie or if it's Matilda Miles or Zoe Manton, it doesn't matter. They all want to stand up and play number one for their club at pennant level.
Well, I'd love you to give the phone call to Amelia Winnie and tell her that she's not playing number one for her grand final. I think there might be some real stern words on the phone. And I think that's probably another reason that you don't see a lot of shifting up that top of the order, because players want to wear the badge of their number one player. And you made a good point last week. You found it surprising that we send out our number five and our number seven first and not our number one. And I tend to agree with you. But the one thing that I will say when it comes to finals is it often comes down to your number one game. And there's nothing like watching the two best players for those clubs coming down 17, 18 and down that stretch and seeing how they handle the pressure and seeing some often exceptional shots coming through. So I know what you're saying, but part of me also likes the fact that we send out our top guns at the end, and I sometimes get to watch some of the best golf coming through. Not that our number five's not playing incredible golf, because they are, but your number one, I mean, we're looking at what, world number 36 or something ridiculous. Yes. I'm hoping that I get to see some of that golf.
Yeah, that'll be a chat for later in the week when Royal Adelaide takes on Grange. World number 36, I think she's dropped out to 39 now, Reagan, but world number 39 will be taking on world number 492, and that feels nothing like that disparaging gap in the rankings. I feel like that is a, I don't know, 52-48 type of bet between those two. That's going to be a thrilling contest. We'll get to that later in the week. And all of your other points, I'm sure we can talk about some other time, maybe when we debrief the season. But let's move on to the Simpson Cup, because we had two amazing matches, both of them really good, honest, tight affairs, exactly what you'd expect to see at this level in a semi-final. It was Royal Adelaide who went down to the Grange, despite getting off to a really hot start. So 4-3 in the end. So all matches went the journey, which is pretty much what you always want to see in a semi-final. A boil over loomed, but in the end, it is the Grange who gets the job done, mate.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what we predicted, Hooky, a 4-3 Grange's way. I'm a bit upset because it's obviously my boys that got knocked out, but it was very exciting. I had a feeling this game was going to be close, and I'm interested to see the Royal Adelaide boys and their reaction, because I think they should be incredibly proud of the season. Yeah. But I have a feeling they're going to feel like they left a lot out there. And I think the Royal Boys, oh, I know the Royal Boys would have been going in wanting the win like no other. And they got so close, and that's the key thing. And I think they're going to be very disappointed that they're not playing the grand final next weekend.
85 years the drought, Soph, but I just feel like with this group, they sort of peered over the edge this time. They actually could look at the Simpson Cup trophy, and they have been in finals previously and hosted a final as well, you know, and that's where you thought maybe this was going to be the time. But gee, I just feel like with where Alex Pacifico has come from and a genuine threat at number one, Billy still at the absolute peak of his powers. Their middle order is exciting. They've got Billy White has come into this team for the first time. Seth Timko is going to make his way forward. Hudson Haynes is going to make his way forward. I really feel like the next 3 to 4 years, we are going to see a Royal Adelaide victory. They've built really well this year. Some guys really stood up. Everyone made a contribution. And I'm excited to see where they're at, you know, end of 2029, because I'll be stunned if the drought's still there, to be honest.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. There's some really good juniors coming through, some really good mentoring happening from those boys like Billy Cawthorn and Alex Pacifico. I actually saw him on Saturday with Seth Timko and Billy White going out and playing a Saturday round of golf. So I know a lot of effort is coming in from those boys, and I expect the same. I think they'll be lifting that Simpson Cup trophy pretty soon. I know the 85 years is really looming over them, and it's often mentioned by a lot of members, which would be pretty tough to deal with. I'm thankful that the Sanderson girls don't have to deal with that, though. I think they come up to having to deal with that, not quite 85 years, but it's been a while for us too. So I expect the Royal Adelaide boys will be looking at the positives of this game, and it will be hard after last week. But I expect by the time we get to our pennant end of season dinner, they will be looking at the positives and looking forward straight away.
Run through the matches. Alex Pacifico beat Alex Hendrick pretty comfortably. Alex Pacifico, 5.5 wins out of 8 matches for the year at number one. 2 years ago, he was a Bonner Cup player. You know, nothing but kudos for what Alex Pacifico has done, because Alex Hendrick is a stallion in this competition. Blair Christie, all kudos to him as well. He was genuinely ill out on the course yesterday, vomited a couple of times. So he was in real trouble. To be able to deal with that and find a way past someone of the caliber of Billy Cawthorn just goes to show Blair Christie at his best is one of the real stars of this competition. Matt Lawson, well done to him. Turned his year around. He started really slowly, but he had a victory one up. So congratulations to Matt. Will Arnold, I'm sure he would be feeling, I don't know what's happened with Will, because I don't think he's playing bad, but gee, it feels like he's just run into the wrong guy at the wrong time. He ran into Ross Steedman yesterday. He was 2 up through 12 holes. And then Steedman just went on the type of tear that he is capable of, and not many are. He produced a ridiculous birdie from the trees on 16 and then won the contest on 17. I think he'd won at that point 4 holes out of 5. And so Will Arnold, that was sort of like the key match, if you like. Will Arnold went from potentially delivering the winning point to having to shake hands and know that that was the end of the season. I thought there was a great little match between the two kiddies. So Billy White beat Alan Zinn at number 4. I've made a joke here. They look like NAB Oz kickers, those two. You know, they played at number 4 right in the middle. So it was sort of like at halftime, you send your little blue and red kids in the blue and red Guernseys out. But yeah, just two superstars butted heads, and well done to Billy White on getting the win there. I've got to say, Baines and Bogdowski played at 7 and 6 respectively. So that is probably as good a 7 and 6 as we have ever seen in Simpson Cup. And they're going to go out early again against Cuyonga next week. But I tell you what, if you broke even against those two, you would be very, very satisfied, wouldn't you? Because that's a really massive hurdle to get over at 7 and 6. Darren Baines, Jackson Bogdowski.
Yeah, incredible anchors for Grange. I think that's what we'll be talking about in our preview for the grand finals, is the depth of Grange. It's absolutely incredible. And they got past Nathan Kent and Anthony Olsen, which are the Royal experienced players. And I think they'll be a bit disappointed of that result, but they had a tough task ahead of them. It's not your usual 6 and 7 that you're coming up against.
And of course, the Grange will be taking on Cuyonga next week, who had a solid, not exactly glittering win over Tea Tree Gully. Tea Tree Gully, as we expected, have been certainly providing plenty of cheek right throughout the year. And this was no different yesterday. Tea Tree Gully went in with 0 Summerfield, so neither Adam nor Will was available. And that certainly hurt the bottom end of Tea Tree Gully's order. Jordan Percy's come in at number 7, essentially replaced Jeff Brennan, who's the club captain, of course, and is a very, very good golfer in his own right. But Jordan Percy's come in, played the last two games win-win, and now win in the semi-final as well. Heath Richards, Malachi Marshall wins again, just like Swiss watches, aren't they? Lockie Oakes had a rare loss, got done by the Mongoose, the man who bites the snakes off heads, Benny Hallam. But Frank Vukic did enough against the Crown Prince, Sadira Bottiger, and that was where the 4 points came from. And Joel Durnford and Chris Austin shook hands for a half because they hadn't finished when the 4 points were in. So good victory for Cuyonga. They'll take a lot out of it against a really strong opponent, Soph.
Yeah, it's funny. We picked Cuyonga at the start of the season and they started so slow. I thought they were, you know, taking us on a little bit, taking us for the mickey a little bit, but they've come home strong. I did say that this was going to be a bit of a pillow fight, and you said it didn't happen with any glitter. I didn't actually see any of the games out there, but I expect it was actually some exceptional standard of golf. TTG, what a season though, Ben. You've got to give them props. I know they've probably not had the finish that they wanted. They came home with a bit of wet sails, but I mean, to knock out the premiership and not a premiership team from 2025 and to not see Glenelg in the semi-finals, it's always a tough task to knock out the Sandbelt. We've spoken about it before. Sandbelt often take the juniors from the hills courses, and their teams and their depth is exceptional. TTG to even be in the finals and to be serious grand final contenders as well is a massive achievement, and I cannot wait for 2027 for these boys, because they have some absolute staples in their team and experience that I think are only going to gain even more experience. And like you said, they didn't have the Summerfields, they didn't actually have their strongest team, and I think that must have hurt a fair bit.
Really good point, Soph. So yes, Tea Tree Gully, I'm trying to remember now, Soph, they were either 6th or 7th last year, and to be top of the table for the first half of the season, finish 2nd and go deep into a semi-final, Dylan Reid and his group should be very, very proud indeed. Just a line on Cuyonga as they head to the grand final to wrap us up. A team that, well, I think we thought at the start of the year when they beat the Grange that here we go again. This is just, let's just engrave the Cuyonga name on the trophy now. They've been a little bit up and down throughout the middle of the year, but gee, you know what? They get into a grand final. It's at their home course, Soph. Suddenly, I feel like that's a flip of the coin next Sunday.
I think it's a massive flip of the coin. And I think the scary thing for Grange is Cooey's horses, like the Heath Richards and the Malachi Marshalls, which I feel a bit bizarre calling Malachi a horse considering he's the youngest out of the squad and he's only been around for probably 2 years in their Sanderson Cup, but he just feels like a player. He feels almost like the upcoming Heath Richards. Like, I expect to see him playing for years on end. I expect him to be an absolute anchor for that team. And Heath in particular wasn't having the best season, and now all of a sudden I'd be so scared of Heath at his home course because he's come to and he's going to be a key player in that grand final. So I think Grange will be looking at that semi-final and looking at where the wins came from, and a lot of them came from that bottom end of that order, and I'd be scratching my head and maybe thinking about what I want to do next.
Yeah, I've already started to have a look at how the matchups are going to front, and I cannot split that match. That is all for later in the week, Soph. We are going to wrap it up here. But before we do, we've got a massive night tomorrow night. It's probably tonight as people are listening in. Can you tell us what we've got the inaugural version of?
The Hooked on Sports Player of the Year Awards. And I'm very excited because, Ben, you've kept me in the dark. I have no idea who's going to be leading the Player of the Year points. That's exactly how it should be because I am a player myself. As much as I'd love to hand a trophy over to myself, I've got a feeling that there's no way my co-host would ever even let my name get anywhere near a leaderboard because he always picks the other people to beat me. So I know I'm probably not anywhere near that leaderboard, and nor do I deserve to be, but I'm so excited to see who is. I have my sneaky suspicions, as I expect a lot will, but Ben, I don't know how you picked this because some Simpson Cup players and some Sanderson Cup players, a lot of our undefeated seasons, it's been some incredible golf for these minor rounds. I've been so happy we've been able to promote it on this podcast, and I'm excited to actually celebrate it as a podcast group. I reckon we've got about 70 and 80 people, Ben, so that's a bit scary as well.
Yes, I was a little bit worried because this was sort of all hastily convened, and I do want to thank both the Glenelg Golf Club and Rob Vincikovic and all of his team for being prepared to host it. Golf Australia have been extraordinarily supportive as well, so we've been absolutely thrilled to have their support. But yes, this is the Hooked on Sport Simpson Cup and Sanderson Cup Player of the Year Awards. We've got a multitude of awards. Our Young Players of the Year, Golf Australia will be recognising all of those players under their criteria who have had an undefeated season. And then we'll be recognising our Most Improved Club and the live count, 3-2-1 style for the Simpson Cup and the Sanderson Cup Players of the Year. Yes, Soph, probably one thing I will concede is I didn't think it was going to be appropriate that the inaugural women's winner of the Player of the Year was going to be my co-host, Sophie Hilditch. So whoever it is, I suspect you'll be presenting it to someone rather than presenting it to yourself. But it's going to be a great night. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun count too. I'm in a position where I now know what the outcome is. They're both really thrilling counts, so it's going to be a lot of fun. We're really grateful that the clubs have all got on board. In fact, Soph, we've been really lucky that the clubs have been so supportive of what we've done all year. We're consistently getting wonderful messages around the place that people appreciate what we're trying to do and shine the spotlight on what is a wonderful competition. So it's going to be a great way to wrap it all up from our perspective tomorrow night at the Glenelg Golf Club, you and me doing it together.
Yep, super excited, Ben. And you know what? I would encourage even more messages because I absolutely love seeing them. And I love at Pennant at the moment, I'm getting a lot of the men and a lot of the women coming up, and all your kind words are very much met. And also all the bad words when I've thrown you under the bus, I also enjoy those. So I apologize. Yes. I've actually asked my Royal Girls to not listen to our preview podcast because I don't want to put the knockers on them.
Aren't there a few who've banned listening to me anyway? I think one, Laura Birchmore, has said, I'm not listening to you for the entirety of the rest of the year. Sorry, but it's just too stressful for me.
She's an avid listener. She always listens to the podcast, and for the whole Pennant season, we've completely lost her. But she might come back and re-listen to some of them because I have mentioned her name has been mentioned a few times. But Ben, I'm looking forward to it. Will be tonight when listeners are listening to it, and I hope to see a lot of our listeners out there. And I'm excited to award some trophies, some much deserved trophies.
Big night tomorrow night, the Hooked on Sport Player of the Year Awards for the first time. Later in the week, on Friday morning, you'll be right here able to listen in to the Hooked on Sport Grand Final previews. Soph, you and I will do that together. Looking forward to your company then. See you tomorrow night. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll see you during the week.
Thanks, Hookie.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.